Easter Seminar, Campus 2004, Lecture 2, The Illuminated Christ in All. What is expected of us? What is expected of us? I would like to share with you this very simple illustration, which I have shared before, and which I'll share again and again and again. Human beings are expressing as human beings. They are intelligent, and they are wise, and they are knowledgeable, and they have emotions, and they have attitudes, and they have many, many things, most of which are not beneficial. And one of the things that a human being does is they take an animal and they make the animal their friend. It's called a pet. Whether it's a fish, or a dog, or a cat, or a horse, or whatever the animal may be. Even reptiles, snakes, and rodents, and so forth. Well, what happens when they do this? What happens when they do this is the human being inflicts upon the animal all of their personal attitudes about an animal and about themselves. The human being thinks that the animal is going to have the same attitudes that they do. They don't realize that the animal has one purpose, and that purpose is to be a pet, and only a pet. And as a pet, that animal has one purpose, and that is to delight its master. Now, you don't think it's difficult at all to have a piano delight you. Are you trying to tell me something, sir? Are you trying to tell me something? You went potty. You went for your walk. You did everything great. Now is the time for you to sit down and be quiet. Okay? You going to be quiet? Yes? Okay. Then lay down. Lay down. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's it. That's what it's all about. Now lay down. Lay down. Lay down. 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 No, not me, you. Down. 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 Mm-hmm. Lay down. That's a good boy. That's a good boy. Mm-hmm. Here. That's the way. There you are. That's a good boy. That's a good boy. Mm-hmm. That's a good boy. Mm-hmm. Now you stay there. Stay. That's a good boy. Take a nap. Mm-hmm. After lunch, we're going to have, after this lecture, we'll have a run. And then you'll be glad you had a nap. Okay? You going to lay down? You can lay down. That's the way. 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 Mm-hmm. That's the way. Mm-hmm. That's the way. Mm-hmm. Good boy. Human beings try to teach their dogs their emotions and their feelings. And they try to teach their lizards and their reptiles and all of the other creatures in their world their emotions and their feelings. And then they wonder why the creatures are sort of doing things improperly. A dog learns to do yes or no. It does not learn to do why. It is not a matter of decision of the dog to know why it does what it does. It does what it does because it is told to do that, and it is trained to do that, and it is perhaps instinct to do that. A dog does not say, I am going to go and take a cookie from the table, but I know it's going to make my master very unhappy if he finds that I've taken a cookie from the table. So I will take a cookie from the table so secretively he won't know. Well, dogs don't do that. They take a big bite of cookie, right, and start eating it right on top of the table, and you know who's been there, you know. So, dogs are here to do one thing, and that is to delight their master. And if dogs don't delight their master, then they don't feel that they have accomplished what they want to accomplish. Now, how does a dog delight its master? By doing what its master asks it to do, and with no changes in the plan. No feeling sorry. You might say, well, I didn't recognize the signal that he wanted to go outside and go to the bathroom, and that's possible, but basically, the dog does exactly what he's supposed to do because that's the way he's been trained. Now, sometimes it takes a little more training to get that through, but it is just a matter of training. And it's a matter of a what? Now, Ellen was very concerned that the leash was so short for the puppy. Well, the puppy is not going anywhere. The puppy is laying right at my feet. The puppy is staying right here. He has no other purpose but to be near me. And if he has a purpose to be somewhere other than near me, I don't want him. I don't want him if he doesn't like to be around me, if he doesn't want to be in my company. He's not my dog. I'll find a dog that does like to be in my company, you know. And a dog that does like to be in my company is a dog that I love, a dog that I take care of, a dog that I pet, a dog who I create to fulfill that purpose of being in my company. Okay? You say, boy, that is really dictatorship. That is really dictatorial. That is really, you know, taking away all of the spunk from the dog. No, it isn't. The dog's delight is to delight its master, whoever its master may be. And even when the dog does silly things like winding itself up on its cord and winding itself up on a tree trunk by going around in circles, that's part of the game too. They know exactly what they're doing. And they do this to get pity from the owner, because the owner is going to feel sorry for them. And it's not a matter of feeling sorry. It's just a matter of recognizing that that is the dog's life. The dog's life, and any dog book will tell you this, is for the purpose of delighting the owner. If a dog's life is not to delight the owner does not buy the dog. The owner does not get the dog. Now, we watched a movie last night, and in the movie, the young man and woman were having a very lovely marriage, and no children, and he was dreaming of doing his wonderful creative work. And he didn't realize what his wonderful creative work was. He thought it was writing music, and perhaps it was, but really, he was a people person. He was a person who liked to be around people, and he didn't know that. But he fell into the opportunity to be a teacher at school, and the first time any of his students or the other teachers had a problem, he fell right into the picture of being a loving gesture to them. He was sort of a puppy dog. He was a puppy dog for the principal. He was a puppy dog for the students. He was a puppy dog for everything because he hadn't decided to be a human being. And then a point came along where he decided to be a human being. And when he decided to be a human being, he changed his whole modus operandi. He changed from being a puppy dog driven by the desires of others to a man driven by his own desires. And he started to play the game of being a teacher in a most remarkable way. And he was so remarkable. He wanted to help the students so much to unfold themselves that at the end of the show, he was appreciated for what he did. Now, not everyone is appreciated for what they've done, but he was. Now, did he create that for himself? He always wanted to write the great symphony, remember? He always wanted to write that great music. He wanted to write that great music, he wanted to write. And he did. But he never said anything about playing it. He never said anything about performing it or anything else like that. And so in the end, he ended up performing it. And it was quite a noble piece. Nothing to write home about, nothing that Beethoven or Bach or Mozart might find competition, but it was good. It was a good, lovely piece that had feeling in it, emotion in it, and good ideas in it. Okay. You see, what is expected of us as we are on this trail of the illuminated Christ? What is expected of us? Well, what's expected of us is that we listen within and we hear within what the divine within reveals to us to do. Now, to play the game of the dog a little further, does the puppy listen within? The puppy listens to its master. The puppy listens to its own self when it wants to. But the thing is, it's not happy doing that. Because you see, the world of the puppy doing its own thing doesn't exist anymore. The master has pretty well taken care of that. The minute the dog does not have a home or a master, as we saw in a previous show, the dog is considered a wild dog. In fact, the very fact that the beautiful dog that was brought to this young man had been without a master for a short time, they called him a wild dog because he hadn't been cared for, he hadn't been loved or looked after, and finally he found a new home and a new master. And what was his first duty to the new master for the dog? To be one with him, to go wherever he went, to do whatever he did, to sleep in his room, to be by his side, and always to be with him. That is the purpose of a pet. Now, the purpose for us, you might say, is to be a pet, to be the pet of our Christ consciousness, to be the pet of our illumined Christ self. And when we are the pet of our illumined Christ self, we have to listen to our illumined Christ self. And as we listen to our illumined Christ self, then beautiful things happen. Now, the Bible gives us references to this. Go to the Father within, who seeth in secret, and he will reward thee openly. Now, I've attempted to explain this to you a number of times, that Jesus was a Jew. Jesus was a rabbi. Jesus was the whole 7-9 yards of the Hebrew faith. Jesus knew the teachings of the Hebrew faith forward and backward, upside down and around about. He was a master at it. He learned it, perhaps, in his own home. How he became a rabbi, why he became a rabbi, it's unimportant. But what is important is that it was so. And so, when Jesus taught the people the new ideas, I give you a new commandment. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, all thy spirit, and all thy being, and thy neighbor like thyself. These are the two and the greatest commandments. Not to destroy the old commandments, because the minute you try to destroy something, the something becomes martyred and becomes all the more impressive. The minute you try to tell a person that their faith is no good, they'll begin to defend it. But the minute you tell a person that their faith is wonderful And here is another way of looking at it. Here are some other aspects of their faith that we live by that are important to us. Oh, there's other aspects? Oh my goodness, yes. And then they begin to recognize that, yes, there is a broader scope to their faith than they had considered. But if we were to in any way say that their master, that their faith, their original faith, was not good, then they would fight us. Now, if you are sitting there with your dog, and it can be any kind of dog, from a little guy to a big guy, and some bad person comes up to you with a club and starts hitting you, what's the dog going to do? The dog is going to defend you. The dog doesn't care that you deserved to be beaten up by a club. The dog doesn't care about any of these things. The dog only cares that you are its master and it is defending you. You understand? Now, if those were men who were beating up on the boy in the movie the other night instead of four mad dogs, and the dog stopped the men from doing that and killed a couple men in the process, the dog's death knell would have been written instantly. But because they were mad dogs, other pets, it was allowed and allowable. You see, we have all sorts of gradations on how we look at our illumined self. You yourself, at this very instant, would say to yourself, oh, yes, the dog should kill mad dogs that were hurting his master, but they should not go out and kill men who are hurting his master. Well, we saw Gone with the Wind. And in Gone with the Wind, Scarlett O'Hara went into the camp of the enemy, and she was riding alone in her buggy and acting like a jerk. And in the process, a few of the men who were living alone in this camp with very low scruples began to attack her. And she escaped through the machinations of the film writer. And when she got home, her husband heard about it, and he was so incensed. He wanted to protect his wife's good name that he took a few people with him and went off to the enemy camp. And it wasn't really an enemy camp. It was just an encampment of the winners of the Southern War. And started to attack them. And in the process, several people got killed, and the husband himself got wounded. And you see, when they brought him back, the husband was considered a dog. The husband was considered a wild dog attacking these men who were the Northerners. You understand? And so the husband could be taken to jail and he could be fined. It wasn't the matter that the Northerners had done bad things, which they did. It was the matter that the Northerners were bringing charges against this Southerner who was protecting the dignity of his wife. And so, you see, when you're dealing with this, you have to look at where you are. You're not dealing with the idea of humanity. You're not dealing with the idea of north and south, of animals and pets and so forth. You're dealing with a major picture here of, so to speak, right and wrong. And what is right and wrong? That goes into whatever the philosophy of the culture may be. Because one culture may call one thing right and another culture another thing right. If you went into an enemy camp and you killed all the enemy, you killed 40 men, and you would get a medal for doing this. However, 1 hour later, when the war was over, if you would go into the enemy camp and kill 40 men, you'd be put on trial for murder. You see, a few moments make a big difference. And an attitude makes a big difference. And you may have thought the war was still on, and you went in and did that. And so, you know, in your mind, you were doing what you were told to do by your nation. But the thing is, the war was over. And it shouldn't have happened. And it shouldn't have happened at any time, anyhow, as far as our moralistic attitudes are. But what is expected of us? What is expected of us? Should we go out and kill? Should we go out and be like pets? Should we do these various things? Well, what should we do? What is expected of us? What is expected of the illuminated Christ? What, or just plain Christ? You don't even have to say the Christ is illuminated. The Christ is illumination. But what is expected of you as the Christ, as the illuminated Christ, as the illuminated God? What is expected of you? Now, what is expected of us is that we act from our divine nature. You get in your car, and you do not find it unusual to say, I surround this car with my pure white light of love. All its ways are peace, and all its paths are pleasantness. You don't find that unusual. Okay. You're going into an area of a war-torn area, and you enter that area, and you say, I surround this area with my pure white light of love, and all is in divine order. You understand? What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? That is just the way it should be done. But do you do that, or do you grab your gun and say, I'm going to protect myself? Do you try to do all sorts of things which make you an aggressor, that make you strong enough? Do you carry a big club, you know, or a big gun or whatever you carry? Or do you carry big thoughts? Do you carry big thoughts? I surround my world with my pure white light of love, and all is peace and all is harmony. Have you ever said that? And I say, no, you haven't. You've said derivations of that, but you have never said that. I surround my world with my pure white of love, my pure white light of love, and all is in divine order, all is peace. Now, you see, when you see something like that, you put a cause in motion. It does not create the situation. It merely creates you being aware that the pure white light of love is there. You are aware that all is in divine order, and you are aware that there is peace there now. You follow that? Mm-hmm. You see, you're aware of it. And in being aware of it, what happens to you? In being aware of it, you act as though it is so, because you're aware of it. So, are you aware of acting, there is peace on earth, and it began with me? Are you aware of acting the Christ consciousness? You know, the traditional church has a phrase which is interesting. It says, what would Jesus think if he saw what you were doing? What would Jesus think if he knew what your attitude was? What would Jesus think? Now, we might reword that, because Jesus really doesn't care. What would the Christ think if it were aware of what you were doing? Or better yet, anyone want to tell me?
God.
Huh?
God. I.
Anyone want to tell me? What is a better phrase to use there than even that? How would I, as the Christ, act here? How would I as God, how would I as the Christ act here? Now, but not what's right or wrong, but how would I as my divine self act here if my divine self were acting? See, that's that's all that's expected of us, is that we act from our divine nature. Now, What does your divine nature require of you at any time? What does your divine nature require of you? It requires of you that you perform according to your highest and best. Now, we saw this movie about the dog the other night, and the boy was without a mother, and the lady was coming close to his father, and the father says, "You know, I'd like to marry you," and the lady says, "Wonderful, I would like that very much." Then the man, under a legal situation, became vindictive. He became mean and hateful. He wanted blood. He wanted revenge. And she said to him, "Why do you want revenge? If you win the case, that's great. If you don't, that's great. But the thing is, revenge does not do anything for anyone." And he says, "Well, I've got to have revenge." Because he was mad, and there's no because, but he was mad. And so the woman said to him, "You are not the man that I had agreed to marry. I don't want to marry you, if that is what your attitude is." So you see, what was it she was doing? Was she acting from her Christ consciousness? Did she love that guy? Did she really want to get married to him? Did she think that they'd make a wonderful home together and that they would sort of fit in each other's arms? Did she think that? Then why would she throw away a perfectly good opportunity like that? Because for her, living according to principle was far more valuable than living without it. Living with vindictiveness, with revenge, living with the idea of getting even with somebody, that's always mean and always very tough. Anytime you ever feel that you want to strike back because somebody's hurt you, then stop and think, how would the Christ in me respond on this situation? We all know, unfortunately, the mamas and the papas both, the bully comes along and the father says, "Stand up to him." And the bully takes a poke at him. "Well, hit him back." And then, finally, in this particular show, the boy did not want to be mad at the bully. He did not want to recognize the bully as being a bully to him. And so he invited the bully to play his games. And as he invited the bully to play the game, the bully soon realized that this boy was genuinely interested in him as a friend, not just to get him off his back. And the father said to him, "Now, there are difficult ways to do these things. And you just made it a little tougher for yourself to be his friend when you acted like his enemy, when you gave him a sandwich from your counter and you filled it with fishing worms instead of with hamburger, you know." And of course, it was a very graphic and attractive little activity, but and it made us laugh, and it was is really an indication of how sick we are. What is expected of us? See, we laugh at something like that. And that was a naughty thing to do. A very naughty thing. That was an evil thing to do. Because if he does not want to eat worms, he should not have to have worms to eat. And we don't stop and think that this is not a laughable matter. This is not. We cannot afford to laugh at the frivolity of life. We cannot afford to laugh at the lack of what is expected of us by our divine self. And what is expected of us by our divine self? What is expected of us as we live our life from the highest and best that's within us? What is expected of us? What's expected of us is who we conceive our divine self to be. Who do you conceive your divine self to be? Do you conceive your divine self to be something you have not yet attained? Something that you might never attain? Something you might never be fully aware of, whatever it is? Perhaps that's what you do. And if that's what you do, then you can never live up to whatever you conceive that to be. You can never live up to principle. You cannot live up to principle if you think that principle is beyond your availability, your knowledge, your experience, you know? So many people, they do this. They say, oh, yeah, yeah, in principle, that's good. You've heard that? In principle, that's good. Yeah, from the absolute point of view, that's good. But this is everyday life. This is when you're really cutting the mustard. You're really working with these things, and it's not that easy. You got to be really into this to know how to handle it. You got to face it. And, of course, you don't have to face it. You don't have to face it. In the movie again, what did the little boy and the little girl do? The little boy said, hey, come on, go fishing with us. I want to be your friend. And the guy came along and was fishing with him. And then one little boy couldn't come fishing because his father wouldn't let him come, but he was still part of their team. So the girl and the boy, they said, okay, we're going to give a portion of this to Jimmy because he couldn't make it. Well, blah, 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 the other boy says, he should have. Well, they said, no, we're going to give a portion to him. And so he gave back the money so they could give the portion, but he was very angry about it. They stood up for principle. They stood up for principle when Jimmy wouldn't have even cared. But when Jimmy heard about it, it meant a lot to him. And they stood up for principle, even though it made all of their work in bringing this boy to be a friend of theirs and to their flock, because when they stood up for principle, they had to stand up in a principle that was not in keeping with what he was doing. You see, what he was doing, he was being a mean little boy. And because he was being a mean little boy, he could not see hide nor hair of what was going on. But later, he did. You see, these were all little seeds that were planted. And if you were alert to it, you would see them being planted. And you'd see how they all culminated when the little boy had to get in the jury stand, or in the stand of the judge, and speak the truth. Speak the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Boo! He didn't plan on that. He knew of the jury and getting up and lying, but you know, you can't lie in court, you know. And so it was a tough thing for the boy. But he told the truth. And he did tell the truth. And he said, I was going to lie because, you know. And super. But it was so gently done, so innocently done, and so well done that it showed living according to principle does pay off. And perhaps the people who watched that show gained more lessons in metaphysics and philosophy than they ever dreamed possible. Because they're subtle, and there's something that people would naturally go along with. People would naturally feel about it very strongly. And that's great. That's great. But you see, are you ready to stand up for principle when you don't know what's happening? You see, if you were in that show and you were reading the script a dozen times, do you think that every one of those actors and actresses in that program realized what it was all about? Most of them were just doing their little thing and didn't realize the overall picture. If everyone in that film realized what the whole thing was all about, they would have been poor actors. You know why? They wouldn't have been normal. The normal actor is one who gets incensed and gets angry and gets, you know, uptight with things as they should be done. And then when the woman plays the bad woman, she has to really play the bad woman hard, because she is not a bad woman. She is not a woman who is living regardless of the morals of the people around her. And so she's playing contrary to that. And that's tough. That's tough. But when they play the game, and they play it beautifully, then you don't even think about that until later. But that's what it's all about. What is expected of us? What is expected of you, and what is expected of me in being the Christ consciousness? What is expected of us? Are you expected to be alert, alive, enthusiastic about life? Yes. Are you expected to say every moment of your life, I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body? Yes. I am whole and perfect? Yes. What is expected of you? Are you supposed to say, all is in divine order? Yes, 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 1,000 times yes. And are you supposed to say, there now is peace on earth, and it began with me, again and again and again, proving to your own consciousness the truth of that statement? Will that statement bear fruit? Oh my, yes. Certainly will. Are you strong enough to care? You know, if we were living on the edge of these war-torn countries, war would be very much in our thought. Peace would be very much in our thought. But would we say, there now is peace on earth and it began with me? No. You wouldn't say that, because you would feel ludicrous. You would feel it's out of place. You would feel that you should do something about it. You're here in this war-torn country because you're supposed to go and shoot the enemy. You're supposed to stop the war by hurting other people. Well, when you really get around to it, that is where the most important work is done. When Jesus visited the sick, he didn't visit them from his house up in the top of the hill and say, yeah, they're home, perk, they're home, perk. He went down to them, and he showed them by his presence that it was his word that did the healing. It was his word that brought about the wholeness. His word, and they accepted his word. Now, they all didn't. They all didn't. There were many people who Jesus, quote, quote, healed, who were not healed. But I want to say this now and have you think about it very seriously. When Jesus spoke his healing word and said, you are whole and perfect, go and sin no more, were they whole and perfect instantly? Yes. Did they go and sin some more? Probably. Did they think it's too good to be true? Probably. Did they fall back on their old ways and have the illness return to them? Some did. Some didn't. And so, Jesus could not speak his word for healing without a healing happening. In other words, Jesus spoke his word for healing, and every time he spoke his word, a healing happened. Now, why then do we have the illustration at all? And why don't we have the follow-up stories that would go along with that to support it? Because they knew that in those days just as much as we know it in these days. Why wouldn't they do that? Why wouldn't they do that? Why wouldn't they say, they were not healed? Why wouldn't they say, they went away healed, but later on they got their diseases back? They did say that. They did say that in 3 or 4 places. Maybe even more. But think about it. We think, just because Jesus healed, that the healing had to be evident to all the world. Number one, who is the healing evident to? Rita? To Jesus. Jesus did the healing, and the healing was evident to him. And number two, who was the healing evident to? Anyone around. Mm-hmm. Anyone around. Now, that they went away and then the illness came back, that had nothing to do with the healing. Because you are a free spirit to go back in and have the diseases again and have the problems again, even after you have had a spiritual healing, so to speak, by Jesus. Of course, it wasn't the spiritual healing. Jesus' healing was merely returning to your original purity and integrity. And when you return to your original purity and integrity, what happens? You're home purged. But what if you get back in the mud pile?
Then it was not standing.
No. What if you get back in the mud pile?
Can I pick it up again?
You pick it up again. Jesus said, go and sin no more. If you're going to, so to speak, sin some more, you're going to have that experience. So what's expected of us is that we live according to our divine nature. We live according to our Christ consciousness. You understand that? That's a wonderful, but a positive, but a tough experience to go through. So think about that. Think about that. You're living from your Christ consciousness. Now, is the Christ consciousness a real, vital, viable thing for us to experience? Yes, it is. You know why it is? It is because it is the original purity and integrity. When we return to our original purity and integrity in our healing experiences, we return to everything. Now, is the water going to heal you when you get into the healing waters? Is the cave of the Virgin Mary, so to speak, going to heal you, or at Lourdes, if you get into it? No. Is there a high energy in that water or in that cave? Yep. Mm-hmm. Sure. Need there be a high energy for your healing to take place? No. Your healing could take place like that, any moment. Huh?
And anywhere.
And anywhere. And be done. And be done. Now, hey! Why do I tell you? You're known by the people you associate with. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You're known by the people you associate with. And if you're going to start associating with the same people you did before when you got in trouble, then you'll be in trouble again. And if you're going to start associating with the same people who live diseased lives and who lived mentally unsound practices, you're going to do those same things again. Now, you're not going to go in and heal them. You don't have the strength for that. You think you could, you think you would, you think you'd like to because they're nice people, but let them alone. When you find your way, you let those alone who had been with you in your degradation. And what you say to and of them is what? For you, all is in divine order. All is good. All is very good. For you, all is in divine order. You say, this property of the University of Healing here is surrounded by my pure white light of love. All its ways are peace. All its paths are pleasantness. Everyone who walks on these grounds is instantly illumined with their spiritually illumined body and being and all that good stuff, you know. And you get off at the end of the experience and you say, okay, now what all did I say? Now I got to start saying all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Then what do you say? No.
It's done.
All, yeah, that's true. It's done. That's very good too. But all is in divine order. It is done. See, all is in divine. Then, after you've done all that mid-work, you know, then you are at the end. Now you say all is in divine order, and it's done. And let it go. Let it be. But we don't do that. And why don't we do that? Because we think we know better. We think we know better. And when we think we know better, what are we doing to ourselves? We're closing the door on our spiritual growth. You know, we were talking the other day how When you tell a person not to do something, they are inclined to do it. When you tell a person not to touch the wet paint on the bench, they're inclined to touch it, even sit on it. When you tell a child not to do something, he is inclined to do it. Now, why is a child inclined to do something you tell him not to do? A child is inclined to do it because that's what you are inclined to do. This is what you have taught your child from the beginning. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. You know, you say it in front of your kids, and pretty soon your kids say, nobody's going to tell me what to do, you know. And we build that up as an idea in our minds and in the minds of our children. And then we wonder why our children are tough little nuts sometimes, you know. Hey, anything you tell me to do, I'll do it. I do not keep people around me that I could not have say to me, I say to them, anything you tell me to do, I will do because you're a good person, right? Anything you tell me to do, I will do because you are a good person. I will not do what you want me to do because I'm a rebel. I do everything everyone tells me to do because I surround myself with people who are fabulous, who are wonderful, who only want to tell me good things to do. Do you understand that?
Yeah.
Do you see how important that is? Very tender and very important. So now, when you have that, then what's next? What's next is being yourself and having fun. What's next is following the pathway that leads you into your divine inner self and enjoying it and having the time of your life. What is expected of us, huh? What is expected of us when we say, I am the Christ? No. I am the illuminated Christ. I am the all, the Christ of all. You say, I can't. You say,
I am and I do.
That's fantastic. But if you ever say, I can't, if you ever say, I don't know, if you ever say any of those, all right, then do it. But this is the important thing. That's what's expected of us. That's what's expected of us as the Christ. That's what's expected of us as the Christ, and that's good that you're so enthusiastic about that aspect, because that way it will be good for you. And you're saying all that too, aren't you? Good. So remember, this is what is expected of us. We are expected to live according to what we believe. Now, if you do a dirty thing, that's because in your consciousness you don't think that's dirty. You think that's the proper thing to do. You see? And now, if you do a dirty thing and other people call it dirty, you say, oh, I better think about that. Now, why do I call that good? Why did I do that? Why did I even think that thing? For instance, Mariella comes in from playing, and her girlfriends were kind of rough, and she says, Janet hit me. And you say, ah! You know? An old mother coming out, you know, all a tiger for her daughter. And but then you instantly grab a hold of yourself and you say, how would I, as the divine, respond? And then you say, Mariella, I don't know. Perhaps you shouldn't play with her anymore. No. Mariella, what happened that she hit you? Well, to tell you the truth, Mom, we were pulling on this rope, playing, and I pulled so hard, she came over and hit me. I was holding onto the rope, and I pulled it to me, and you know, Mom, it's really my fault. And what does Ellen immediately say? If you're saying something to me, say it out loud. But what does Ellen immediately say? She immediately takes Mariella and goes over to the girlfriend's house and says, hey, I'm sorry that I pulled you so hard that you fell into me with your fist, you know. And I still like you. You're a wonderful girl, you know. And instantly, you get the venom out. And now, the other girl may not even have realized that she hit Mariella, you know. She may have just thought, oh, boom, you know. Like when Ellen is playing at the table with the dogs, and Ellen stands up, and Rex stands up under the table. Conk! He hits his head on the top of the table. And Ellen says, ooh, you know, that must have hurt. But the thing is, we have to always be careful of every aspect of what we do, that we don't inadvertently cause someone to hit us as we're playing on the rope together, or have the dog stand up quickly and bump his head on the bottom of the glass table. You know, we have to be very careful, because we're the master. We're in charge. But those things can happen. Those things can happen. And those things can hurt, too. So we want to be very careful of that stuff. Now, I'm going to take a couple minutes right now and say, did any of you have any questions about anything we talked about up to now? If you have any questions about anything we talked about up to now, just tell me. So you have no questions, huh? I am so explicit in everything I say, you understand it perfectly. Yes?
I would have liked to hear again thoughts from the mention and the expression that from the people when they talk.
Hi, Sylvia. Talk loud so you can come through the microphone here.
She would like to hear
Thank you.
The part again where the people talk about
the yeah.
Come on.
Something negative.
Yeah. Das war jetzt gerade kurz vorher, was so wichtig
ist. Just shortly before, what is so important to say.
Das ging so schnell.
That was going so quick. That went so fast. That.
What was the theme of it?
Das war das Thema.
Also, ich habe das, wenn ich denke, ich kann es besser schließen, die Tür zu meinem geistigen Wachstum, nachher war das. After them.
In other words, are you talking about that we should not have people in our worlds or friends in our world we cannot trust?
Oh, es ging es darum, dass wir nicht Menschen in unserer Welt haben sollen, denen wir nicht vertrauen können.
Und das Thema.
I think it was the theme where you said that we have people in our world that live in the mud, and then we are there too, and
that's the same thing. Okay,
yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's mention that. Esther was asking about the question that we brought up before, that if people live in the mud, and we are with them in the mud, that whatever that mud signifies, we are it. If that mud is telling dirty jokes or telling gossip about other people or being harmful to other people, telling lies and so forth, then we are known by the people we associate with. And so when we continue with them after we have had the awareness that that is incorrect, and our mother might have straightened us out or someone, and now we know that that's not the thing to do. If we go back with those children or those people who are telling gossip, who are lying, who are cheating and stealing, we do not help ourselves, nor do we help them. And one reason, we are not strong enough in our conviction yet to stand up for that. Plus, they think that we are still with them when we go back there. Now, what you can do, you can put a new cause in motion for yourself and say, I see the good in everyone. And then, as they might come into your life for whatever reason, you immediately say to them, isn't it wonderful to always say the truth about our friends? It is such a rewarding thing. And they'll say, what? You know, but no. They are ready to hear that. Now, the whole group may not be ready to hear that yet. So you just work one at a time, but better that you take your newfound direction of your thinking and go in that direction with people who think in that direction. Now, if you are a Catholic, then, and you're attending Protestant services, you're not a very good Catholic. Because if you're a Catholic, you should be 100% Catholic, follow the teachings of the Catholic Church 100%, and go for it, and get the benefits from it, too. If you're a Protestant, you should be 100% Protestant. If you're a Protestant, a Presbyterian, or Lutheran, or Methodist, or whatever you are, Baptist, be the best Baptist that ever walked the face of the earth. Because if you're going to believe something, believe it 100%. And if you stop believing it, then go wherever your new thought takes you, whatever that may be. Maybe you're a good Baptist, and then all of a sudden it doesn't make sense to you anymore. And so then you become a good Catholic, you know. And you say, well, how could I do that? Don't judge. You may have a boyfriend or a girlfriend who is a good Catholic, and you see how beautiful they live their life, and you say, that's the kind of life I want to live. And so you go with them, even though the philosophy isn't what taught them to do that. That was their inner awareness, their illumined Christ consciousness that taught them to do that. Now, I'm not saying the Catholic Church wouldn't teach that too, and the Baptists wouldn't teach that too. They all teach this moralism that theoretically Jesus taught. But you see, Jesus never taught moralism. Jesus never taught to judge another being. Judge not, lest ye be judged. For with whatever judgment you judge, so shall you be judged. And he said, be tolerant. What all did he say? He was telling you to not pay attention to what other people do. He said, it is done unto you according to your belief. You see, all of these things, and they are things that lead you to your inner self. They lead you to the Christ within you. They lead you to God within you. You see what I mean? And that's the wonderful thing. But, again, if you go in the mud with your old friends, unless you're having a mud bath and having a ball, you're gonna get all that dirty, schmutzy stuff all over you, and you will be a very unhappy person. Does that sort of answer your question? Good, good. But now, whenever something comes up and it brushes by you too quickly, make a little note right away. And then when we take a pause or we take a moment to answer some questions, then bring it up so we can answer it, okay?
Thank you very much.
Because we're very happy to do that. Okay. Everybody all set?
Yes.
All right. Then in about 20 minutes or whatever, we'll have lunch?
Quarter past.
Yeah, 15 minutes, that's good. Okay, then have a lovely 15 minutes. And we'll see you afterwards. I love you.
Have a good 15 minutes.